So there's an epigraph from 1 Corinthians 12:13. For in the one Spirit we were all baptized into one body, Jews or Greeks, slaves or free, and all were made to drink of one Spirit. It's called Conjecture on the Stained Glass Image of White Christ at Ebenezer Baptist Church. If in his image made him I, then make me a miracle. Make my shrine a copper faucet leaking everlasting Evian to the masses. Make this empty water glass a goblet of long-legged French wine. Make mine a Prince Purple body bag designed by Crown Royal for tax collectors to spill over and tide into just before I rise. If in his image made him I, then make my vessel a pearl, Coupe de Ville. Make mine the body of a 28-year-old black woman in a blue pattern maxi dress cruising through hell on earth, Texas, again alive. If in his image made are we, then why the endless string of effigies? Why so many mortal blasphemies? Why crucify me in HD across a scrolling news ticker tied to a clothesline of broken necks long as time? Is this thing on? Jesus on the ground? Jesus in the margins of hurricane and sea? Jesus of busted levees and chocolate cities? Jesus of the Middle East, Africa, and crows flying backwards of blood on the leaves inside diamond mines in underdeveloped mineral-rich countries? If in your image made are we, the proliferation of your tie-dyed hippie doppelganger makes you easier to daily see. And in this image, didn't we make the Godhead slightly stony, high enough to surf a cloud? And didn't we leave you there where surely paradise or justice must be meted out? Couldn't we see where water takes the form of whatever most holds it upright? If then this is what it's come down to, my faith in rifle shells, in Glock 22 magazine sleeves, isn't it also then how, why, in a bucket shot full of holes I've been made to believe?
That's the poem Conjecture on the Stained Glass Image of White Christ at Ebenezer Baptist Church, the poet Marcus Wicker. It's the download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My next guest, Marcus Wicker. He just published a new collection called Silencer. In it, Wicker writes about gun violence, police brutality, and life as an African-American male growing up in the Midwest. The collection getting great reviews and high praise from critics and fellow writers alike. Wicker was just in town to read at the Chicago Poetry Foundation, and he's my guest in studio tonight. Marcus, nice to meet you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Nice to meet you. This is a great collection of poems. I guess my first question is, did you set out, this is a collection over a period of time,
right?
Did you always know that there was going to be a collection called Silencer when you were writing these poems?
I did not. In fact, the book started in 2011. I just finished up edits on my first book, which had a lot to do with pop culture and masculinity, mm-hmm. these love letters to my secret heroes like Flavor Flav, RuPaul. And I was at the Fine Arts Work Center in Provincetown, so it's off the Cape. I was sort of falling in love with the natural world. I was writing these odes to the sea and the beach forest. And so, no, I didn't think that gun violence would creep into the collection, but over time, things evolve.
What I really like about the collection, too, is that I've read that you said this before, too, that when you're dealing with issues like police brutality or gun violence and their big headlines, whether it be Trayvon Martin or Eric Garner or Laquan McDonald in Chicago.
Sure.
So many people will use their words in quick takes on social media, Twitter, Facebook. It's almost where we go to get instant reaction from critics, commentators, people that we trust. We quickly see. But you choose to take time to craft the words, to write poetry. Why is this your medium? Why do you decide to do that as opposed to jump right on Twitter and talk to your followers about what you think about a certain injustice?
Sure. I mean, first thought, best thought has never been the way for me. Poetry is sort of the way that I solve for X. Sometimes there are things on my heart. I just get sort of a feeling, right? I see what's going on CNN, but I can't quite contextualize it. And so putting it on the page is a way for me to demystify my feelings for myself.
A lot of these poems are about your experience, who you are, and growing up in the Midwest around primarily white friends who, who never really wanted to get into the issue of race or when it gets brought up.
Right.
And also it's about, I kind of took from it too, that it's about this idea of being somebody or the contrast between who you are and who you want to be.
Right.
Where does that come from?
Well, I think a lot of the poems have to do with African Americans in academia. You know, black parents, they teach their kids all the time, education is the silver bullet. All you have to do is achieve and just be better, and then you can be who you want to be. But it turns out after you get those degrees, after you get the tenure track job, there are often roadblocks that impede your success. And so part of the project is me writing about those issues that stop success and also playing with, is this an American dream? Is this something that I actually want? Right now that I've gotten close to achieving it, is it all that it's cracked up to be? And so that's a question that I ask over and over again in the book.
Yeah, and the American dream means so many different things to so many different people. And a lot of times we seem like there's one idea, this picket fence idea of what the American dream is. And especially you and me both growing up in the Midwest, there is this ideal of making a world for yourself and making money and being able to have a family. But the American dream means something different to everybody.
So for me, initially I thought it was, you know, you get the good job where you're making a salary that you don't feel embarrassed by. You've got the mortgage, right? You've got the marriage, you've got the family. But then when you're an academic or a writer like me and you get into social circles where you're not allowed to express yourself, and that's what you've been trained to do your whole career, you realize, well, that's just as important as those other things that I used as a measuring stick.
Expression plays a big role in the collection Silencer, and really even the title. I mean, Silencer, we can't be silent. But more often than not, and even in today, even the headlines that have permeated the news in the last couple of weeks about expression, about protest, about all the issues that are happening with football and, and things of that nature, you get this idea that expression is accepted in certain circles, in certain places, in the bind of a book or on a play or on a stage or maybe in a piece of music. Expression about social issues, particularly when it comes to American patriotism or other places, it is unacceptable that, that many people will step up and say, stop expressing yourself. Do you feel, is that what you're talking about, like in academia?
I do.
Like,
yeah, I think that in some ways there are issues that makes folks uncomfortable to talk about. You know, they say it's not polite to talk about God or money in polite conversations. And in academia, there's a way that if you talk about the way that black folks are disenfranchised in this country, if we talk about economic inequity, we talk about police brutality, there's a way that critics say, well, what about speaking about tetrameter, right? What about your literary heroes, right? What happened to those conversations, which are certainly important and important to the poems in the book? But right now, if I didn't use my voice to speak out against what's going on in the country, I wouldn't be doing myself justice as a poet.
Poetry has always been an acceptable form, along with other pieces of art, whether it be music or, like I said, theater, to be a vehicle for protest, to be the place where you can express yourself with the word. How powerful is the word? In Silencer, you get at a lot of the core issues that are surrounding police brutality and inequality. There's some great stuff in here when it comes to understanding yourself and race and race relations. So how important is the written word when it comes to the protest movement in 2017?
I mean, I think that there's a way that I always tell my students, once you write a poem and it's out there in the world, you're no longer there to defend it, to speak up for it. And so if you do your job well, what you put on the page goes much farther than your front door. And if it's crafted, different people will be able to interpret it and pull out different things that are important to their life. And so that's what's so powerful to me about poetry, is that it means something a little different to everyone else. But if you've done your job as a poet, the central theme or message that's going on beneath the text is always there for someone to unearth.
My guest in studio, award-winning poet Marcus Wicker, his new collection is Silencer. It's out now, and he was just in Chicago at the Chicago Poetry Foundation for a reading. A lot of the poems have to deal with police brutality. We talked about this. But what I really like about it, and this is on purpose, I've read about your story, is that they're generic stories that if you pay enough attention to the headlines, you know you're speaking about the situation in New York with Eric Garner or Trayvon Martin, even the notes on your website about these poems. But in there, you don't mention Trayvon. You don't say Eric Garner. You don't say the names of Philando Castile or other people who have become headlines and people who were affected by police brutality. Why go generic as opposed to the specific?
I think that there's a knee-jerk reaction against rhetoric, whether that be on the media or on the page. And so writing these poems in Silencer, where I write about police brutality, I write about cases that have actually occurred, but strip away some of the names and the details, it's my hope that it will be productive. Like, what's absent will stir someone. That will make them uncomfortable. So it's like, you didn't want to have this conversation with me and talk about it in public. But now that you're reading this poem on the page and it's devoid of those things that you know and that you've been avoiding in the first place, how does that feel? So in a way, it's my own silent form of protest.
It is strange to think that those victims and people who died in conflicts with police become political rhetoric. They're names. Trayvon Martin is a political issue.
Hashtag.
As opposed to a person. Right.
Right.
Does that surprise you?
No. I think that there's a way that we're always looking for a quick soundbite. We're always looking for what's easily digestible. And so, no, it doesn't surprise me that these people who were flesh and blood have become a punchline. No, and that's sad, but I think that's just the reality of corporate media and news in America.
You'll hear people speak up and say the issue of injustice or inequality, it's overrated. Or, and I don't mean overrated in any sort of offensive way, but that they, even what we see with the NFL, what do you protest? What's actually being protested is not even being discussed because people
right.
don't want to either deal with the fact that this is an issue, or they dispute that it's an issue. They outright deny that it's
because
an issue.
Because it doesn't come to their doorstep. Right?
And that's my question. When issues happen, whether it be Philando Castile or Laquan McDonald or cases that we've seen for the last 5 years over and over and over, as an African-American male yourself, what does it mean to you? Because more often than not, I hear in this chair that anyone could be Philando Castile.
That's right. And it makes me think that no matter what you achieve in this country, a bullet could always come for you. And so you've got your graduate degrees, you're a professor. It doesn't matter. Look at Henry Louis Gates Jr. They get stopped right by Harvard at his home. Someone thinks that he's breaking into his own house. That's because of perception. That's because of stereotype. And so when people say to me, oh, we should get over these issues, we really shouldn't. Because no matter who you are as an African-American or a person of color, they always affect you.
In your case, as an African-American growing up in Ann Arbor, Michigan, having a lot of white friends, do you feel that injustice when it comes to the relationship with the police? Could you be, like you said, Professor Gates, or could you be
sure.
a Trayvon Martin? Do you see it that way in your head? You're like, I've been in those situations. I know the injustice that's being spoken of.
I do. I mean, there was I won't mention the name of the school, a school I used to teach at in southern Indiana. And the first week that I was there, I was driving to campus. I get pulled over by a cop, and he says to me, I've seen you drive this route 4 times in the last 5 days. It's very clear to me that you're not visiting. You actually live here. Why aren't your plates changed? And so I said, sir, I just moved here, like you said, a week ago. But then it was clear to me that he'd been following me. And so then the next week when school actually starts, I get pulled over again by the same cop who scares the hell out of me with his 10-gallon hat. I'm late to my first day of class, and the provost had to call on my behalf and say, leave this guy alone. He's one of our professors.
Hmm.
Yeah, it can affect anyone anywhere. And it happened while I'm driving with my suit and tie on and my very regal glasses. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
When we talk about protests, and it's obviously stirring up a lot, and it's funny because I've been watching the Ken Burns, the documentary, the Vietnam documentary, but yeah. In 1968, during the Civil Rights Movement, a lot of the same issues that Ken Burns chronicles and documents in this are similar to 2017, whether it be marches or sitting at lunch counters, protests over civil rights. It seems like everything that's old becomes new again. But in your sense, as a poet, as someone who's collected these essays and written these essays over the last couple of years, are we improving when it comes to race relations or at least relations between the police and African-Americans? Are we regressing? From your vantage point as a writer who with a lot of protest poems, where are we at?
I mean, I think from 1968 to the current era, certainly there's been progress. And anyone who says that there hasn't been, I think, is a little misguided. However, under the current regime, under President Trump, it seems as if white supremacists and people who sort of have that inclination have become a little bold. It's in vogue to be voicey about your predilections these days, and that scares me.
Marcus Wicker is the poet. His collection of poetry, Silencer, is out now. He was just in town at the Chicago Poetry Foundation. Marcus, thanks for coming in. Great work, and I appreciate you sitting down and talking with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.